So, and I have shared that conversation with Council President Sailing, making sure that he understood that we are reaching beyond the scope of this working group, and he is comfortable with it. And so we will go from there. But that is not our conversation right at this moment. We've got, and Ryan, I want to tell much how appreciative I am of you bringing together folks. This has been invaluable for me to understand and appreciate the work of in the work in this area that you guys all do, and to Director Schmidt and his staff for being so responsive and giving us things that we are looking for in a timely fashion. With that, I'm going to give you a few minutes if you care to offer a couple comments.
No, I echo your statement for Director Schmidt. I'd like to introduce Ian Reeves and Stockton Reeves, anyone who works within the public safety architecture planning advising space in Florida. These are familiar names and companies to those folks, and I think they're going to bring a little different perspective as it relates to next steps for JSO and some recommendations. So really appreciate you both being here, and look forward to seeing what you're presenting.
And with that, we turn it over to Ian.
All right. Well, thank you for having us. We like to consider ourselves as a resource to the public safety industry nationally. So as Ryan said, we're going to try to walk you through what we believe is an appropriate several next steps in the planning process before you even get to any design. And see if this will advance. Yeah. Steve, can you do the first one? Okay, so
just real quick, a question. This obviously doesn't only relate to the Administrative Services Building. Obviously, this focuses as well on the pretrial detention center, the process you're talking about. Yes. Just want to make sure so that...
The process does.
Yes, that's
and,
really
the process is, and we'll go through it, but it's a very logical, chronological sequence of steps where one step informs the next two.
Absolutely.
And you buy off on that step before you proceed. And everyone has to be on the same page.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. So just a little bit about ADG. My dad started our firm in 71, 52 years and running, almost 53. We only work for government entities, and we only do public safety architecture. So that's everything. You know, we've really done almost 450 planning and design projects nationally. And, you know, we've done a magnitude of 911 PSAPs, emergency operations centers, all the above training complexes. I just flew in from Oklahoma. We were presenting to the State Department of Public Safety for their new training complex on Tuesday. You know, we're located headquartered in Winter Park. We have another office in Dallas, Texas. So we got here just under 2 hours. So it's pretty close. Mm-hmm. As far as we're concerned, that's local because we work from Miami to Seattle. And if you, you know, we've got about 45 to 46 people in the firm. But everybody in the firm specializes in public safety. So we're not a firm that does a whole bunch of different things. You know, we compete with firms that have 25,000 people. And when they bring in the top five of them to present, that doesn't mean you're going to get to work with those. With us, you're always getting the A game. That's what we promise. So these are just a sampling of the projects in Florida that we've worked on. That doesn't include the top of the panhandle, where we're doing a bunch of work up there for them. Santa Rosa County and Tallahassee and whatnot, but we put the star where you are. So this is, we're really proud of this. My senior vice president, the director of operations, when we're talking to folks, he explains how much pride we take in getting to serve those that protect us. So we take that very seriously. Just real quick, I mean, it's not about us, but every one of these projects, these are the protocols and design guidelines that we have to comply with. And there's a litany of them. And they're there to protect, maintain a professional accreditation, and maintain the protocols for safety for visitors and the users in the facilities and on the campuses that we work on. I was really proud of the fact that the IACP, the International Association of Chiefs of Police, invited us to have two members on their committee that updated the law enforcement design guideline standards and the law enforcement training complex standards last year. And they only do that every 20 years in the update. So we are the only firm in the nation that had two members, which was really a great committee to participate in. It was a volunteer opportunity. We also kind of practice what we preach. So The book on the left was the 911 Communications Future Trends for PSAPs, Public Safety Answering Points. I got to author one of the chapters, the only architect in there, which was pretty cool. The one in the middle was funded by the Department of Homeland Safety. We did it for the state of Florida. That's the Emergency Operations Center guideline. Basically, it's, you know, how do you identify what vulnerabilities are and maintain operations so nobody two blocks away could take down your daily operations capability. And then we also published the only book of its kind, the Public Safety Architecture book, and it's just about projects like this in the process. So the book mirrors the seminar that CPS and ADG have been co-hosting for 23 years, teaching people like yourselves how do you realize these projects and what to look forward to. And
it's not a bestseller on Amazon. It's not a niche market.
But it's kind of like the folks that come to the seminar, and it's usually the deputy chief or the chief deputy, and we're like, what did you do to upset the sheriff or the chief? Because your life's going to change drastically because of the time it's going to require. Yep. From your daily ongoing operations. So we preach that you really, whoever gets tabbed with being the project manager representing...
Better have 10 years left in your career.
Yeah, you don't want a short timer, that's for sure. But it's going to consume your time, especially on a project of this scope and magnitude. Right. And then Stockton, you know.
So the Center for Public Safety does a lot of work up front. We do a lot of the staffing studies, the asset allocation studies. We do grant identification, and that's a partial list of some of the things. And what makes us different, as Ian said, is this is all we do. I don't do anything for schools, hospitals, residential, commercial. It's all law enforcement, fire training, EOC, 911. And the next slide is...
That's why we named it the Center for Public Safety. It's our research and planning division.
Right.
They also help us identify grant opportunities for our clients.
Correct.
So our taxpayers aren't footing 100% of the bill for these types of projects because they're not inexpensive.
Yeah, we have a client we're starting to work with. We're going to help identify funding for them to do some of the pre-design work, some of the staffing studies, and some of the schematics. And then we've identified another federal grant that they're going to be able to get some the actual design work, and then another federal grant that they can get some construction work for. We track about 28 different federal grants, and unfortunately, none of them open and none of them close at the same time. So it's a process throughout the type of the year. We also have a document that we have gleaned from all of the federal sources that identifies 745 different items. Could be anything from hardware to training to your holster, and we've identified in the document where you can apply for which grants, and that's a very valuable tool for us.
Okay, enough about us.
Yes.
Let's talk about your project and the standard process that I think really fits what you all need to do.
Excuse me, I don't mean to harm, but I want to know, what is the grant program you're talking about on the federal level?
Well, there's the BRIC grant, which is BRIC. It's Building Resilient Infrastructure and Communities. If you just Google BRIC, BRIC, it'll pop up. There
is
are
found in the DOJ.
It's a FEMA.
It's a FEMA grant, and it covered a lot of the pre-disaster mitigation grants. That it now is an umbrella organization, has three federal grants underneath it.
Right. Basically, they merged the HMGP, the Hazard Mitigation Grant Program, and the pre-disaster mitigation, the PDM.
Into one.
So your project's going to take on a life of its own, okay? It's going to be a multi-year commitment, and you're going to need to consider the pre-design planning phase, which is all of the details of the beginning. Then you're going to have the design phase. Then you're going to have a bidding phase where you reach out to, hopefully on a project of this magnitude, you would go out to a construction management firm, as Jay from Ajax indicated. That's probably the most logical delivery mechanism for this type of project scope. And then you're going to get into the construction phase, and we're anticipating it's a minimum of 18 to 24 months just for the initial building. And then you're going to go, after the building is completed, you're going to want to go through about a two-month building commissioning phase where we're tweaking, not we, but whomever you work with, is... making sure that all the technology and equipment and systems are functioning properly. That's the most important part, so that when your selected builder entity turns over the keys, it's already up and running. If you have an EOC in the building with you,
or a comm center,
or a fusion, or an RTCC, a real-time crime center, which we would fully anticipate, That technology is the key to the success of getting the most credible information to the folks in the field as quickly as possible, so when they arrive on scene to deal with an event, it's a safer environment because they know who they're dealing with. They know if it's the person involved in the event or if it's not. It's got to be terrifying to pull up to a car that you don't know if the guy has a 9mm in his lap, you know, something like that. So, and then post-construction services. After, you know, your selected builder entity is going to give you typically a 12-month warranty on a project like this, you can write into your request for qualifications for the selected builders that want to pursue this project a 24-month warranty period. They may charge you a little bit more, but I can guarantee you it's money well spent. And then at the end, if it's a 12 months, your architecture engineering team should come back 11 months into the warranty. If it's a 24 months, they should come back 23 months and do a full punch list, a full walk around and inspect the building integrity on the outside, roofing, window seals, everything. Expect the balancing and the lighting. Inspect the air conditioning systems. And if you document it before that warranty period, your builder is required to address it before the warranty expires. So that's really a smart thing to do.
Let me jump in there real quick. And this is for Director Schmidt and Ryan for you to speak to. I love this slide. And is this what I would characterize as a standard? Because I'm looking at the work and the responsibility of this committee. Mm-hmm. And I think as much as anything is making sure that we provide recommendations as to the process, mm-hmm. as much
it's
as
critical.
To the what.
It's critical.
And I think if this slide, this flow here that you've laid out, is that consistent with what your experience has been with respect to... Because I want to make sure that we take advantage of something like that when we communicate to the community out there our recommendations, that they understand that this is a multi-year process and this is what happens over the course of that time.
Yeah, we've seen this consistently from one project to the next. And I think a lot of it, the ability to stick to those durations relies a lot on the procurement office's ability to stick to those durations.
And I think that's critical. I think we want to get on a timeline that we hold ourselves to. But so I'll let you speak to
that. Yeah, and again, this is assuming that it's going to be a build. And we've had a couple of our chiefs attend the seminars that you're referring to, and this is exactly the information that was provided to them during that seminar. So this seems to be very standard.
Yeah, good. Because I think it's important for us as we communicate to the community as a whole. This is a journey.
Reasonable expectations.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
The most important element to project success is communication.
Absolutely.
And making sure that information is flowing. The most important part of this entire methodology chart is the pre-design planning phase. If this is done right, you're setting the foundation for the entire project. And if you've ever built your own house, you know that if the foundation's not right, nothing thereafter shall be.
And so what we've been doing in the working groups, as you could probably appreciate, is like we're trying to make you understand what kind of how many bedrooms are we going to need?
That's,
how many bathrooms and that sort of thing? So we're trying to, I think through this process, as I've heard time and again from Ryan and others, we're getting a jump on the process because we're helping understand what best practices are, how the culture has changed over the course of the last 35 years, and you know what our present needs are and anticipating the future.
And Councilman, let me just add that if you don't do this first phase right, it's not going to go right, but Ian and I, with each more than 30 years of experience in this field, this is the blueprint for project success. Mm-hmm. Not every city or county follows it, and the ones that don't end up having problems.
Or issues.
Right.
Yeah, so just to walk you through, this is, to me, for my firm, I manage every one of the pre-design planning phases because that's my expertise in doing it 35 years. It starts with getting all the stakeholders together and making sure that we understand what your concerns, your expectations, and your considerations are. So everybody is working from the same sheet of music, okay? Concurrently, following the kickoff meeting, my side would start doing the spatial needs assessment, which is a detailed programming study. Every single room and operational and storage space and technology space that is going to be in the building is identified with current and future growth needs and with caveats of where they should be located next to which unit And if it has technology or special relations, like in forensics labs, we make notations of that. So that informs the next step for the planning team. Concurrent with the programming of the spatial assessment, Stockton does the staffing studies, because they eventually, they're moving parallel, and then they merge. So the staffing study looks at multiple criteria in the seven-phase logarithm, but we merge that to identify the future growth of the department, and where, which, in which unit are you going to be adding staffing. And we do a 10-year and a 20-year out vision. Anything beyond 20 years is a crystal ball, and if people tell you they can be
accurate
with that, I would attest that it's probably wishful thinking. So what you always want to consider, and in the programming, these are expensive buildings, right? Yeah. You want to make the spaces within these buildings as multifunctional and as flexible to be evolve in terms of their repurposing later on. You do not want to give everybody a private office. Certain units have privacy issues, right, that you're dealing with, and you have to have that and encapsulate those. But the more we can keep our buildings open, and the more frequently the larger training and meeting spaces are being utilized and not sitting empty, it saves our taxpayers a bunch of money, and people don't go on tour and say, the building's empty. That's the last thing we would ever want as a public perception to be, the building's not being utilized efficiently. So we seek out those efficiencies. The national average on shared space is about 8 to 9%. Our programs hit 19 to 20 every time. So that's, for every $10 million in cost for development, you're saving $1 million by doubling that efficiency. Yes, Commissioner?
This is really critical, and I don't want you to have to make this presentation four times.
Yes, sir.
Because obviously the Housing and Custody Committee working group would be appropriate, but I would suggest this and offer this, that I anticipate by the time each of the working groups kind of finishes what it does, and if you want to make an introduction to these, to those groups, you don't have to spend 45 minutes walking them through it, that what my intention would then to be is to bring you to the meeting, the next meeting of the full committee, to walk us all through this at the same time.
Okay.
So I think that's going to be probably the most productive use of your time and our time, so that you don't have to do this five to, or four times.
I could do this in my sleep.
I'm sure you could.
This is all I do.
I'm sure you could. So, and I don't want to cut you short, and I just want to be concerned of our time. Mm-hmm. But so, you know, keep going if you want to, and as much as you want to.
Okay.
But I just want to know this is really important for us to see as a full committee, and I look forward to you making that presentation.
I would just add one point, and that is relative to staffing and space needs, there's a very simple sentence. People drive square footage. Square footage drives dollars. Dollars drives decisions.
Right.
And that's the way it flows.
And I think more and more the work of this committee and the charge of this committee is going to be focusing on the process.
Yes, sir. So following, when the staffing and the spatial needs assessments are complete, that qualifies the building size. The building size informs us site candidate needs for how big the properties need to be, right? It's very logical. When we identify the site candidates, whether it's an adaptive reuse of an existing building or a new build, new construction model, then we do a site analysis by looking at all of the utility infrastructure, aerial and subsurface. What are the capacities? We look at ingress, egress points, for the general public and for secured staff parking areas, deliveries, dumpsters for refuse removal, if there's going to be a communications tower, we want to make sure that the staff parking is in a secured environment and nobody else has access to it, because your folks will be coming on a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week basis, and we want to make sure if it's 4 in the morning, it's safe. And then through the site analysis, we look at every component that could influence or be a vulnerability. I'm a Department of Homeland Security risk assessment person. That I do vulnerability assessments of what could go wrong, and then we mitigate that in the planning and design. When we have the site, we have the site analysis done, we do conceptual master plan. Then when the master plan lays everything out for current and future needs that we can project, we go inside that building, and you want to do an operational adjacency diagram. You probably have 40 units in the department, something along those. And who should they be next to for the most efficient workflow and delivery of service on daily operational need? And everything needs to be managed in a participatory planning process. AE teams too frequently come in and say, here it is, and the key staff members haven't had much valued input into the process. That's not the way it should go. It needs to be a cohesive team. You guys all know what you do well, and you're at the top of your careers. Your AE team should just be charged with giving you the most efficient, cost-effective work environment possible.
And I think I know for a fact, we've seen a couple presentations from JSO, Director Schmidt, on that kind of conversation. You've had those kind of conversations as it relates to this kind of focus. But I do appreciate you. Go ahead, and if you want to speak to that.
No, I'm just going to expand on that a little bit. We've had multiple meetings going back now months where we've gotten all the department's heads together and the chiefs together, having those exact conversations. What units need to be positioned next to each other? Where, if it's a multi-store, multi-floor building, what floor is best to have each of those units on? So we, you know, we try not to work at the speed of government at Jacksonville Sheriff's Office. We do multiple things at the same time, and we're moving quicker than I would think most government entities would towards coming up with a good product.
And I take offense to that.
Always let the elected official take the credit.
No.
Two other key components we see in the pre-design planning phase is community outreach. So you're networking with your public. I mean, the public are they really pay for these buildings. And it's important to get their buy-in on the solution. And we've done hundreds of these. And the other one is Stockton and I concurrently, as he mentioned, identify grant opportunities. And then those opportunities require design work and engineering work. And we've got 100% success rate working with FEMA on every grant application we've ever submitted. So,
great
project of this magnitude. We're doing Oakland County, Michigan's Sheriff's Operations and Training Complex right now. It's a $417 million project, and we just put in for $55.5 million in the grant application. So it's a dual phase. I'll get to the grant later. That's separate.
Well, this is just our process. You know, we start up front, and we work our way through it.
For the staffing studies.
Right.
So the process for the spatial needs is it starts with a questionnaire. We analyze your organizational chart structure, and we identify who at a supervisory level would need to work with their committee to complete a questionnaire for their unit. And then that's a pretty quick process, and it's a very participatory. I mean, like I'm saying, so the spatial needs, so all of the primary spaces within the programming study will have a three-dimensional graphic identifying how that could lay out. This also affords us an opportunity to initially develop a budget for your furnishings, fixtures, and equipment, your FF&E, which is a critical soft cost. You could spend millions of dollars outfitting a building. And the reality is you're going to spend 10 to 15 cents on the dollar building it and 85 to 90 cents on the dollar operating and maintaining it for the next 50 years.
Right.
And it should be a 50-year. When you invest this much money, it should be a minimum of a 50-year project for the department and the city and the county. And then you have a detailed executive summary of all the different units that tallies up. Let's see. There you go. And then for the site selection, we developed this site selection matrix that has 10 weighted criterion that are all specific to public safety. You know, if your proximity to potential hazards like a railroad track that's hauling hazardous materials, or if you're next to a chemical plant or things like that, and ease of expansion, adequacy of the infrastructure, making sure we're on the fiber optic loop within the city so we have all the technology we need. Excuse me. And then it has a description of what all those are. And then we have our total committee independently from each other grade the sites, and 98% of the time, the top site candidate rises straight to the top. And then we all look at them together. It's a very effective, objective tool. It takes the subjectivity out of a site selection process. It's above the board. Then the site analysis is just, these are just examples, looking at where certain conditions are, existing structures, do they need to be raised and replaced, do we have good ingress egress points, utilities, everything. And then you go into the master planning, and this is a four-phase concept. You know, as budget funding becomes available, you want to plan for every phase under phase one and delineate what the budget for phase one can accommodate and accomplish, and then set a schedule for how it could go. These are an example of our operational adjacency diagrams. This is the Lynchburg Police Headquarters up in Virginia. But every one of those spaces are accurately reflective of the gross square footage of each unit. So the challenge here is to get the workflow established and get the circulation established and making sure that we're balancing the floor plates so it's a cost-effective building and you don't have floors like that are oversized on one side and it projects out. I mean, unless you want something super cool like in Sydney, Australia, where every building has to be different, you know. But all that does is drive up costs. You really want an efficient building. But these times.
And I assume that you have similar examples for the detention center.
Oh,
and
the variety. We can.
Yes.
I don't in the presentation.
Yeah, I didn't expect you to have it in this one, but if you are going to make it before housing and custody, that you have those as well.
Yeah.
And the examples of how differentiating between, you know, first appearance and adjudication pieces, and how does that relate to the detention piece, those examples, if and when you make this presentation of housing and custody. I probably had some.
We think, you know, seeing is believing. So being able to show a conceptual design, so the tax and the community outreach programs to the councilmen, to the elected officials, the sheriff, everybody, it's important to have these because they're effective tools. I had a cool video in here from the Tallahassee, the $150 million Tallahassee police headquarters we're working on, but it was because we're sharing with Zoom, Steve and I couldn't get it to where it wasn't glitching. But if we're looking, if you're considering a adaptive reuse of renovation to in addition to an existing structure, there's a lot of considerations. First and foremost, you would need to identify when the original building was built and under which permit and which building code, because the building codes upgrade and update every 2 to 3 years. And so sometimes we have to do a forensic investigation where we have to, if we don't have as-builts, which are the when it was constructed, what the drawings looked like. And you know, you're a level 4 essential facility per the Florida and International Building Code. It must maintain operations during and immediately after any major event, hurricane, all the above. And so it cannot be compromised. So we have to have critical infrastructure redundancies built into the planning and the construction, so emergency generated power, backup air conditioning and heating systems, water filtration and water supplies. A lot of our clients like natural gas generators. Well, you know, if we go to a FEMA 361 for a project like this, which it should be, that's a 72-hour source of energy, and that's a huge tank because when the hurricanes come, we have spin-off tornadoes, and the spin-off tornadoes rip up our trees and our underground utilities get compromised. And Hurricane Charlie came through Orlando. It not only did it kill our parents' house while they were in it, the gas lines and the water mains popped. So we had geysers in the city for a while until the water pressure subsided. So we have to analyze the building codes and what was the engineering requirements at that time in comparison to now when this project would be permitted. And there's always a good bit of discrepancy. We're working for Fort Myers. The city bought the news press complex, the newspaper, and it was built over several years, multiple building additions. And when we did the forensic investigation, much of the building could not be structurally enhanced to meet the requirements of the building integrity with the wind zone and the pressures. So it's all about the pressures, and it's the negative pressures that peel apart building roofs and whatnot. So you have to engineer the entire building to the worst-case scenario so you have no weak link in the building envelope. Exterior forces, when they get inside, quickly become interior forces, and the building's not operational. So there's a litany of challenges, and sometimes it turns out that it's more cost-effective to build a new building, so you're not starting with a 60-year foundation. And there's a phasing schedule, and what we recommend to our clients is if there's opportunities into consideration, whether it's cost savings to buy a good new building that's been vacated, right, or if you look at new construction. So we like to provide cost construction development models of both options, and so you can do a cross comparison to see what works best for JSO and the community, and how are we going to manage the value of the project and maintain the budgets that we're given to work with. So it's imperative that we have this data because somebody will always ask, well, did you consider this or did you consider that? And before you go to a formal public presentation, you should have already woven that information into the presentation so they could just check off, okay, they did this, they did this. And you all understand what your local constituency is going to be considering and work with your AE team during the planning phase to address those concerns, considerations, opportunities. This is about the community outreach. We did this several times in Tallahassee already. This one was from out in Provo. We did their 230-some thousand square foot public safety municipal complex. It's a gorgeous building, but that's important. So what we see succinctly to be next steps is, you know, establish your committees, which you already have, so you're ahead of the schedule, which is great. Craft a very specific request for qualifications, RFQ, through procurement's help, and make sure that it lists in there that you've worked on so many of these projects in the recent history with credentials and references from those clients, and see how they work with the client. These projects are incredibly complex. Issues will come up, and expect that. That's going to happen. It's how the issues are addressed and resolved in a timely manner that is really what's the critical thing.
If you want to stay within the timeline that you've outlined here for us, because you're setting expectations of deliverables, and particularly for people working inside these buildings.
Yes, sir.
We're hoping that within 3 years, you'll find a better home.
So this is kind of like the map for success. You put it out, you get the project team moving, you do a very thorough, accurately documented pre-design planning study. We always like to go to our elected officials who will be asked to sign on the dotted line to fund this project and do individual briefings about the project scope, magnitude, and complexity prior to any public meeting. So they can be much more informed, and they can ask pertinent, realistic questions about the project during the public forum. We find that to be a very helpful tool. And then you want to advertise concurrently at the initial design phase for your construction manager at risk. Get them on board as early as possible, as Ajax and Jay Smith articulated. That is the primary best solution for the construction delivery method, in our opinion, because your builder and your AE team, the architects and engineers, are working in harmony with the user group and the city's or the county's project management team all together from the get-go. So everybody's working from the same sheet of music, as I said. That's really contractors in a hard bid scenario where it's the low bid process, and design team members and users are somewhat adversarial in that process. We want to avoid that. This is like a short-term marriage for you all. You better like who you're working with, because you're going to be working with them for 4 or 5 years minimum on the project of this type. Make sure you've exhausted your search for supplemental funding sources through the grant programs. I mean, that speaks volumes to the general public that they're not footing 100% of the bill. I've stood on many a presentation next to a mayor or a sheriff and said, we just got today the word that we got $2 million. And that's money that's not coming out of our taxpayers' right. pockets. That's I can't tell you how important that is. And I take great pride in getting money for our clients. You can tell, I bet. That community outreach program, and then making sure you have a comprehensive facilities management plan afterwards. So everybody that's going to be operating and maintain this building is going to be knowledgeable about everything that's being proposed. Your outside of JSO team needs to include facilities, IT, and planning at a minimum.
Right.
They're critical to the coordination. We even want to work with the facilities folks. Just think about the paper products that are in the restrooms. You don't want to specify systems that require you to special order stuff for one building out of the 100 buildings you all operate and maintain.
Sure.
So, I mean, you've got to coordinate those efforts. It's down to the nth degree, really. and then just, this is going to be a huge building, considering the staffing level and the number of folks that are going to be operating out of it. These are just some of the recent ones that we've worked on. We just finished Knoxville's. They bought a huge hospital complex, and we renovated it. And it's a very state-of-the-art operational facility. Like Orlando Police Headquarters. The other thing I failed to put in here that I wanted to is you all should try to get on as many tours of other newly constructed facilities as possible. And if the architect's there, don't worry about hurting their feelings. Ask them, now that you're here for a year, what would you have done differently? Or what could it have been better? You know, we learn something on every project. And when you stop learning, you turn into a dinosaur. And our dad always said, how many of those are left, right?
Are each of these all-purpose-built facilities or any readaptive use facilities?
So there's a combination. Like Knoxville's adaptive reuse. The rest of them
I'm sensitive
are new. Yeah, most of these, the rest of them are new.
Okay.
Yeah, well, you can see Oakland County, Michigan, is 480,000 square feet. That's huge.
That's pretty big.
Yeah, well, that's Laurel, Mississippi, was Gainesville Sheriff's Office. Those
yeah,
all
and the Washoe County Sheriff's Office that we did a while back is an adapt. It was an old Winixie shopping complex.
Yeah,
now they've got the 911 PSAP, they've got the EOC, they got fleet maintenance, rolling asset storage, and the operations center.
Okay.
So it's nice to have everything on a campus, but you can't always find a piece of property to accommodate everything. We're struggling with that on a couple. Tallahassee probably won't be able to afford their indoor firing range and training complex, but it's programmed and it's identified exactly where it's going to go. We have the utility stub outs already planned in. So the growth model is already there, and it's right where it should be. So they have to drive forever to get to the range just to qualify.
But you don't want to value engineer what you are building.
Right.
You want to make sure you build it.
Value engineering is an ugly word to us.
It very much is.
If you work with a firm like Gilbane or you work with Jay Smith at Ajax, they don't do value engineering. When we work with our construction management partners, we do value management. That means the pre-con team doing the cost estimating, we understand exactly what the costs are. Schematic design, we verify we're on target. If we're not, we figure out where and we fix it.
Got it.
Design development, same thing. Halfway through construction documents, same thing. Otherwise, you've got secrets that pop up at the end or considerations, and nobody wants that. Certainly not the people paying for the building and not the taxpayers.
We've got a hard out of 11 o'clock. We just need about 10 minutes, so you've got about you've got a few more minutes if you like.
All right, just real quick. We lecture at IACP all the time, and the biggest thing we see over and over and over is training is the trend. That's the most important thing to make sure the deputies and everybody in the field force is as well prepared for everything they're going to do. So everything's reality-based scenario training, inclusion of a real-time crime center, opportunities for community engagement, drone applications. We're seeing that more and more. The way these representatives of the department, sheriff's office, are going to deliver services in 20 years is going to drastically evolve. It's an ever-evolving. It's like technology evolves three times in 10 years. So making sure that everything's flexible, looking at the appropriate integration of security and technology. We're one of the only firms I've ever heard of that includes a technology assessment of every system that would go in the building during the pre-design planning phase. And that way we capture those costs. You want to make sure that when the development options are presented to the elected officials, and each of the development options has turnkey development costs, so they know what they're getting into, you want to make sure that it's as close as possible. So we like to work with the pre-con team. And then just the grants. Right. Stockton just completed a report, and here's a little bit more on some of the grants we're working on and it has successfully done. And that's it. So
as we go down the path that appears to be ours as it relates to the administrative services building, and this is as much for Ryan and others, I'd like perhaps at our next meeting to talk a little bit about the best financial advantage as it relates to adaptive reuse as compared to purpose-built.
Yes, sir.
So that we can see if, in fact, we go down this path. That's a question we're going to have to answer at some point in time if this direction we, in fact, go. I'd love to be able to have some examples of how that has worked out well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I think that's important for the benefit of moving this forward in the communities to say, this is the direction the sheriff wants to go. And we think it's a fiscal advantage for us to do so, or not, if that's the case.
Ian, how frequently do you see adaptive reuse?
Well, this is a challenging program to put into a building. First and foremost, we have to make sure it's sized appropriately and the building integrity structurally is there. We need hurricane-proof windows. Most office buildings don't have those. You know, the building envelope most assuredly will be pulled apart. You may end up with a shell. You know, we'll have vertical circulation cores could stay. Restroom cores, ideally, plumbing's expensive. Hopefully, we could reuse those and work around them. What happens frequently is that we'll get an office building, per se, a large one. We did this in Lynchburg with the Pacific Life building up there. For instance, it was a very large building, and it was built into four quadrants, right? And it was like a square with a common core. And what we realized during the investigative process was that all the electrical grid distribution was per floor, not per quadrant. So we were going to have to eliminate all the electricals so we could put only our portion on the backup generators and everything else. Same thing with the fire-rated partitions, isolating one user from another user on the floor, so we would have to rip apart all the party walls between the different areas. So you end up pulling out a bunch, and when you don't pull out a bunch, the program kind of gets a little squirrely because you're shoehorning offices and training rooms and forensics labs and things of that nature into existing spaces. So frequently some of the spaces are undersized and some of them are oversized because we're trying to retain using what's existing. And that doesn't speak to an efficiency. And we want the most efficient building possible cost-wise. So that's what we experience.
Which is the charge of this working group.
Yes.
To those two items.
Yeah.
Right? Anything else?
No, I just think as it relates to the meeting next week or the next month, I think it'll be easy to find some historical data on new buildings. Mm-hmm. I think you'll see a pretty wide range for some of the adaptive projects. And it all depends on everything Ian just said.
Yeah.
You know, well, so.
Yeah, we don't like starting with a 50-year foundation.
No, I understand. So, Director Schmidt, go ahead.
Yeah, on the term adaptive reuse, is that basically any building that's not purpose-built?
Correct.
Okay. And I think there are different degrees within adaptive reuse. I hate that term. We're, for the most part, what we're looking for the administrative offices within the sheriff's office, we do office work.
Right.
We're not doing a gun range unless we do a new building, purpose-built building. We're not doing, you know, like a rappelling or an obstacle course or any of that in the office building. So the adaptive reuse, I think there is a spectrum between strictly administrative offices versus all the other things that can come with a sheriff's office or police department, emergency operations.
It can be very successful for the city of Orlando. They could not afford the headquarters that we designed under the new construction model with the full program in it. So I came up with a concept that we submitted to Chief Mina, John at the time, now he's the sheriff, and I suggested we splinter off property and evidence and forensics. And we right next to the 55-lane indoor firing range that we worked on with them was a CERT building, a state emergency response team storage facility. It was two 41,000 square foot warehouses with a 22-foot volume inside, and it was owned by the Expressway Authority.
Yep.
And they were leasing it to the state. But the Expressway Authority coveted a piece of property that the city owned next to Orlando International Airport, so we helped them negotiate a land swap. Mm-hmm. And that was perfect for evidence. Our racks are like 16 feet tall, and the labs, we have 8 multiple areas for vehicle evidence processing bay. So that, and that model was, instead of being $320 a square foot back in the day, it was $156 a square foot. So that got our overall development cost down enough that they could accomplish it with the $40 million they had to work with. And then we're doing the same thing for Tampa PD right now. We had a distribution warehouse from a food service company that's servicing a bunch of grocery stores, and it was a high volume, and we've put evidence and forensics in that, and we're in the construction documents phase on that. That's going to be another successful project, I think. But like you're saying, it has to be specific to the function of the department's program, if it works. You nailed that, Director.
I appreciate that. So I think now we want to spend a couple minutes in hearing what you've heard today and talk a little bit about, and I thank you so much for taking the time to put together the minimum requirements need. One thing I'd be curious to know, and you don't have to talk about this today, obviously we've seen a couple of presentations from your staff with respect to what they envision a new building to have in it. What are we stepping away from by using an existing facility? And that doesn't have to be addressed today, but that's something you need to be aware of.
Yeah, and certainly we've learned through this process. Like again, for us, if we could have all of our wants and needs, we'd have one campus with all the facilities within walking distance to each other. Basically, you look across the street and you go to the property and evidence. You look across the campus, and there's Homeland Security and SWAT with all of their trucks and gear. We'd have our laboratories in the same area, and we'd have the detective division, gun lab, real-time crime, all of that would be in one area. And if that's still a possibility, at a minimum, we're looking at 4 years, mm-hmm. absolute minimum,
yeah, minimum.
With a pretty big price tag. So, again, that's our pie in the sky. If we could have anything, we ever dreamed of, that's what we would have. And then the other end of the spectrum, we stay in the building we're in, and we keep patching it and repairing it and spending money and not having windows to look out of for our employees. So those are the two ends of the spectrum that we look at. In between there, we're looking at all kinds of options, including this adaptive reuse term, to where the administrative building, the police memorial building, is office space. Mm-hmm. There's some special functions within there. The PIOs operate within there. They do videos and all the things that they do online. They do that within that space. The real-time crime center, which is basically a bunch of computers hooked up to a high-speed internet with cameras throughout the city. Mm-hmm. So you have to have the connectivity to be able to do that. And, of course, the communication center is within the building. Mm-hmm. For the most part, that is all online. There is some microwave streaming from the roof that we have to contend with, but it's not, you know, a huge thing. Most buildings have things on the roofs. So between those two spectrums, there's also the cost and the timeline. Mm-hmm. And as we've gone through this process, we've learned that there are options, possibilities, with already renovated offices that we'd have to do a build-out in that would cover all the things that you're talking about. They'd already have the bathrooms in place. They'd already have the break rooms available. And we need to configure each of those spaces within that office building to work well for all of our units working together. And we've already started on that process of trying to figure out, if we were to move into a building, an adaptive reuse, what would that look like as far as timeline, cost, and planning for where everybody goes? You all do this every single day. We do this once in a career. So I like the idea of having some experts involved. If that is one of the options that we're going to continue to explore, having some assistance with that process as well. If the decision and the recommendation is to go with a brand new building, obviously that's a much longer time frame. And
depends on the building.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, from ground up.
I know, but yeah. If we get into the investigative part of looking, evaluating the as-builts and what the engineering levels were, and you start pulling apart the building envelope, everything is exposed on the inside, and we want to make sure we don't have humidity issues getting into the building when they pull the windows out to put in the hurricane glazing systems, because if it's an essential facility, which it will be per the code, it has to meet that criteria, which is above and beyond any standard office building. So,
and again, I think we can have more discussions on that. We have dozens of buildings within the downtown core that don't have any of that stuff and yet have been able to operate for the last 50 years.
I understand.
So, again, cost, time-wise, I think it's all a consideration in that, and the main thing being functional and effective and cost-efficient for the taxpayers.
Yes, sir. So,
anyhow, the processes that you've all have laid out, I think it's fantastic. Again, like I said, we've had staff members go to those presentations, and that is the information that they have brought back. It makes complete sense having that laid out and do that planning ahead of time so you're not paying for it after you're done.
Right. We want to have as many conversations with our clients as possible. So
Director Schmidt, assuming we want to go down this path and it's a conversation for next time, are you all inclined to hire a consultant to help you do the analysis to feel good about adapting to an existing facility?
Yeah, that is something that I think we need to explore.
Sure.
Again, like I said, we do this once in a career.
Yes.
They do this every day.
I agree 100%. And in the context of that, a couple of things too. What I'm hearing in your voice and others is, you know, the existing facility, it's time to move. And as quickly as we can because of it, if it's how you've tried to talk about the adaptive reuse. You guys have been living it every day for decades. But also the advantage of that process, too, it does, at the very least, take some of the pressure off of the detail of the detention center, because now there's facilities there that they can take advantage of, not the least of which is parking, which is a critical issue right now in the process. So I do support and agree that we should continue to pursue this direction, taking advantage of some of the expertise, but something that you and the sheriff need to have a conversation about as to how you want to approach that. But I don't know if there's anything specific to this minimum required list that you wanted to speak to, or this is pretty self-evident. If you, some of your staff, want to speak to it at all, that's up to you.
Yeah, I mean, this covers a lot of the basics that the experts were talking about as far as functionality of a building. It doesn't get into the details of all of the units and where they would be and all that, but
sure.
Just the basic, I'll say, usability of a potential building.
So I'll ask Ian or Stockton in the context, and maybe you, Ryan, want to speak to it too. Is this a sufficient amount of information for you as a good starting point? If we say next time meeting we want to put out, I don't know if we get to call an RFP or whatever it is. Do you have go ahead and take a copy of that one. To say, you know, if we are going to say we're going to take a look at the prospect of a facility, an existing facility, and we make it available to others to take a look at, how much more do we need to define these minimum requirements to say that my building qualifies as a candidate for this kind of, you know, kind of use?
We would have to marry this with the site.
Yeah,
and
but this
building
is all,
requirements.
Everything I read is logical. These are things that we would be looking for.
So it's a reasonable starting point to say, if we let people know out there that we're interested in looking at an existing facility, these are the basic requirements we are looking for, as we call it, minimum requirements we would be looking for that facility.
And there's we could, if you want, we could add some thoughts to this as well.
I just put down my list, constructed within X period of number of years. You don't want a 50-year facility on this list.
Right. The one thing I didn't mention that I should have mentioned about the review process of when you consider buying and renovating a building for an adaptive reuse is having the construction manager as part of that review team. I think that's critically important when we're looking at the infrastructure and the construction technique and what the cost will be.
Sure.
Don't ever listen to an architect tell you what something's going to cost.
Steve, I'm going to give you a heads up. Can you come up to the microphone for me, please? Obviously, our next meeting, we're going to be focusing a lot of conversation on the possibility of going this path. Can you speak to how the city would play into that, the administration and the Public Works Department, Robin and others?
Yes, sir. For the record, Steve Long, Public Works. Yes, sir. This type of process is, you know, this is a lot detailed, specifically the JSO, but it's a similar process we use for any type of city building. I would assume that when JSO is ready to pursue something like this, if they wanted to, they would use Public Works Engineering Division to actually manage this type of project if it was to, you know, go this route. And then our city engineer is a gentleman named Robin Smith. He would actually be as a city engineer, he would oversee the project for our client, which would be JSO. Yep. If they choose to use that, we would go through a process to hire a consultant, an architect type of firm. It would be qualifications based,
yep.
And you guys appear to have great qualifications. And then we would go into a contract with you and start, you know, design. Well, we would go through a similar process to what you laid out, through the pre-planning, through the design, through the, you know, going into construction, bidding into construction. And we use all the different delivery methods. We are using CMAR on multiple buildings right now, as well as a few other projects we have. So we use those delivery methods every day.
And that's the path for construction. If we buy and construct, build out a building that we buy, we being the city.
Yes, sir. Yeah. And if you were to go into an existing building, then again, it would be a decision up to the sheriff if they wanted to use us for anything for those services. But it could be a similar process. It could be a little bit different. I know when the 7-Eleven Liberty came up, it was
that's the example.
Type of process. So that would be kind of the decision that we would be ready to assist with anything JSO asked us to do.
Okay, and I know we have the builders in, and builders like to build. I get that. That's their industry. But with using 7-Eleven as a recent example, we don't own the building that they're moving into. The building owner is doing the renovations. The building owner is paying for most of the renovations, and it's going to be a lease for that division, which is not an option that has been explored much so far, but it's definitely an option that we are looking at within the sheriff's office. Part of that process, and I know we're running out of time, but we've already started working with the city real estate office to try to find buildings within the city that would meet that criteria that we won't buy, we'd lease the space.
And I think that's going to be the crux of our next meeting, is going to focus on what is the best path going forward. I think expediting the process as a lease would be a good way to go with respect to that. Is it a lease purchase? Is it a purchase? Is it purpose built at some point in time? I think we're all understanding and appreciate the urgency of both facilities in terms of getting to them. If we can get a quick resolution to the administrative building situation, we can put a lot of our time and energy then focusing on the purpose-built facility, which obviously, the city would be a major player in that process.
Yeah.
So we'll have that conversation next time, lease versus the other, and then Robin and Nina could be here or whatever to talk about that, or others from the administration as to how comfort. This is a mixed bag. Traditionally, right now, we own the two facilities. And the city owns them. When I say we, the city, and basically we give them to the JSO to use them. But we're talking about possibly a different kind scenario as it relates to.
Yeah, as we've talked about before, the administrative building, the police memorial building, is far less complicated than building a jail.
Right.
That has to be purpose-built.
And we are all in agreement that that's the bigger carrot in this process, as we are going to go down that path. And thank you guys today. This has been really helpful. I would suggest you reach out to Chris Miller to see if we can get his committee would handle it. I'd like to see your presentation as well. And then when we get to the point in time that we move forward, and if we get leapfrogged the process as it relates to the Administrative Services Building, we still stay focused on the bigger issue, which is a new detention center or new detention campus facility, if we take a look at that. I don't have time for public comment unless you want to do 30 seconds, Carnell, because we got an 11 o'clock out. Are you good? Thank you, sir. All right. With that, the next date, I'm looking on my calendar. I'd like to, this Thursday morning, hopefully is a good time for everyone. And I'll reach out to others to make sure that we can get administration there and others as well. The January the 18th or the 11th, you tell me what works for you. Is there anything on your calendar that precludes you from either of those two dates?
The 11th would be better.
Okay. Can we shoot for the 11th and get some thoughts on how you all are progressing in your deliberation and the prospect of maybe bringing someone on to assist you as we take a look at this path? All right, so Sonia, we're looking at, again, 10 o'clock on January the 11th, preferably this room if we can do that, and we'll be focusing a lot of our energy on how to move forward with the prospect of putting together the requirements to make the community available and aware of our interest in moving into an existing facility for the administrative services. And with that, we are adjourned.
For the director.
So, Mr. Smith,
yes, sir.
Are y'all looking at moving into the Florida Blue building?
That is definitely.